The Jewish people in the suburbs or in the cities that are afraid of being Jewish, they need help. And it's a long game.
We have a long fight ahead of us.
Here I am
with Shai Davidai.
My guest today is he has his own branding agency and has been spending the last 12 years branding the Jewish people. He's also a self-described family man, and more important, he's my friend. So here I am with Eitan Chitayat.
Yeah, you did all right.
I did all right.
We got through the introduction. That was the hard bit.
It is a hard bit, especially with you. I can't stop smiling. But
good. We need to smile a little more.
Yes, and we'll get to that. But Eitan, I'm going to start. You know what? Before I'm going to start, I'm going to ask you, have you ever listened to one of these episodes?
No.
Good.
Why would I listen to any of your work?
100%. And it's so funny because like all of what we do is like, I tell you that your videos are too long. You tell me like, oh, I haven't listened. I don't know what you've been doing.
And we don't watch each other's shit. No, I have seen you've had some really incredible people, but I don't watch it because of you. I can't see any more of you.
I can't see any more of me.
No, but some of the guests that you've had are incredible.
All right. Well, now you. Eitan, I'm going to start with a question I start every episode, which is, Eitan Chitayat, what kind of a Jew are you?
Oh, is that a thing on the show?
That's the first question. And that's how I know if people did their homework or not.
All right. I don't know. What type of Jew am I?
You get to tell me first.
No, like, that's the answer. Meaning, you didn't get the joke?
No.
A Jew answers a question.
I only get jokes that are funny.
Oh, here we go. What type of Jew am I? I don't know. What type of Jew am I? A Jew that answers a question with a question. I don't know. I'm Eitan.
Here's why this is so interesting. Because you made this video 12 years ago called I Am That Jew.
I'm That Jew, yeah.
That has 6 minutes of every kind of Jew possible. Mm-hmm. You've spent the last 12 years pushing, creating this brand, I'm That Jew, having every Jew be publicly Jewish.
That old Jew, new Jew, that makes the desert grow Jew, that always trying to make things just a little better Jew. At the same time, don't mind if I'm a self-centered Jew. I'm that persistent, sweated out Jew.
And yet I ask you, what kind of Jew are you? And you're stumped.
I'm not stumped. I'm Eitan. I'm all of them. I mean, it's interesting. Like, I didn't make I'm That Jew to brand the Jewish people. Like, I made I'm That Jew as a letter of support to a friend of mine who is going through a very difficult time in France after Charlie Hebdo and the kosher supermarket killing, when they killed some Jewish shoppers just for being Jewish. The jihadi terrorist that attacked Charlie Hebdo. And she was afraid to say that she was Jewish. When I spoke to her, I checked in on her, how are you doing? And she said, I'm not doing well. I don't tell anyone I'm Jewish. I don't tell anyone I've been to Israel. And that night I wrote, I'm That Jew. And it was kind of a letter to her to remind her, not that she needed reminding, but to remind her of who we are. And it came from somewhere very, very deep inside me, but other people can't define us, and we have to own who we are. But I didn't do it as a branding exercise. It's evolved into that because, to me, October 8th introduced the Jewish community to the silence of our own voices. This is what happens when we are afraid to say who we are. Which type of Jew I am? Right now, I'm that being interviewed by my friend Jew. Half an hour ago, I took a nap on your couch because I'm exhausted Jew. It changes by the minute, but I define it. But I don't know, it's like I'm a little bit of everything.
And you wrote that video, I'm That Jew, which went really viral.
Yeah.
What year was this?
In 2014, I wrote it as a blog post, and in the blog post, there was one comment that was, like, after I put it out there, a few thousand people saw it, and then one person wrote, I'm so glad that I'm not the only person who feels this way, Jew. And when I saw that comment, I turned it into a film and I released it in 2015.
But that film wasn't a letter to your friend. It was a letter to the Jewish people.
No, it was a letter to my Jewish friend, which was a letter to the Jewish people and actually a letter to myself. It was a reminder in the face of all the hatred, all the violence, all the animosity, verbal and physical. Even with all of that, you don't get to define who I am. I get to define who I am. I'm owning it. And I'm all of these things, you know? It was a very personal letter, kind of like we're going to be okay if we know who we are and we remind ourselves of who we are. And it was to her, but it was also to me. And I think the reason why Jewish people are responsive to it is because it speaks to them. It helps them say to the world who they are. And who we are many, 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 many different things. And I think that's so important in an age where being dehumanized, literally, like we like apartheid, we support genocide, we are colonialists, all of that, we're land grabbers, all of that crap. Those statements literally are chipping away at an individual's humanity. So I'm That Jew is reminding us of all the wonderful things that we are, and we are human.
How long is that video, I'm That Jew?
It's very deliberately 6 minutes long.
Why?
Two reasons. One is when I was making it, I just went off. I'm this Jew, I'm that Jew, I'm this Jew, I'm that Jew. And then when I wanted to turn it into a piece, because it's different when it's written, but it was long. And you have to make a decision as a creator. Do you want it to be long and retain the audience's attention? It's quite hard to do that for 6 minutes. Or do you want to do it for a minute, 90 seconds? And I wanted it to be long. I wanted it to be long because there's a lot that I needed to say. And I wanted it to be 6 minutes because of the Holocaust. Because I wanted it to be an homage to all of us and to people who were lost. And
so 1 minute for every million.
I guess, yeah. But by the way, and a lot of people said don't. Like, you know, you share your work with other creators and they're like, it's long. People aren't going to watch it. But I was like, this is what I need to do. This is what I want to do. And it was a decision.
Do you have any favorite parts in that video? I'm That.
No.
What are the parts that you memorize, or do you remember it all?
I don't remember it. I don't. Like, I'm not a poet. Like, I'm not a stand-up. You know, you have those slam poetry. I'm not. I like to sit down and write. Mm-hmm. I'm not a performer. I'm not an entertainer. I've actually, you know, sometimes I'm like, what if someone asked me to perform it? I wouldn't know how.
Mm. Okay, so you made that video. You've been active online for years, way before, obviously, myself, but many, many people.
Yeah, almost 15. Yeah.
15 years.
Almost.
What are those 15 years been like? We're going to get to October 7, October 8. But what has been your activism like for these 15 years, mostly on Facebook, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been, I think activism is, I'm not an activist like you are. I'm an advocate for who I am, and being Jewish is a part of that. So I've been doing this for a long time. In the real world, meaning I've never shied away from openly saying I'm from Israel or I'm Jewish. And I think that that's much more important than doing things on social media, although of course it's important. So on social media, it's been around 14 or 15 years. Back in the day when Facebook was a nice way to stay in touch and you were uploading family pictures and your private page and just sharing your life very openly, in one of the wars with Hamas, someone who was a colleague of mine posted some anti-Semitic things against Israel. They were anti-Semitic. Anti-Semitic isn't that you only hate Jews. It can also be when you apply a double standard to the Jews. And it was pretty awful. And I just said, I don't need this shit. And I kind of like unfriended him. And he wrote to me and he said, I can't believe you unfriended me. You as a Jew should know that genocide is unacceptable. And this was many, many years ago.
Wait, what, do you remember when was this?
Yeah, I think it was in 2011 or 2012. And he called me on it. And that day I wrote down,
Wait, but before we get to what you wrote, this is important because in 2011, they told you, you as a Jew should know that of all people, that genocide is unacceptable. Yep. What genocide was he referring to in 2011?
Exactly. The genocide of the Palestinian people.
For people listening in, Eitan just did air quotes. But this is important because, you know, now people see, and we should acknowledge the mass civilian casualties in Gaza. We cannot look away. Like, there are many, many people that are innocent civilians that are dying.
Yes, that happens.
And
that happens in
that
war.
That happens in war, right?
That happens in war.
And that is not a genocide.
No.
But we're talking 13 years ago, 14 years ago, where none of this was even happening and Israel was already being blamed for a genocide. So what was your response? What did you write?
I wrote Shalom Motherfucker, which is a piece. It was a written piece, which was a response to people writing things like that and them defending them and then misunderstanding us as we are being bombed and killed. And instead of checking in on me, he just started putting out unchecked lies. And at the end, I just said, Shalom, motherfucker. And it was basically a message. If you're going to hate, if you're going to be intolerant, if you're not going to check in on me and my family as we are being targeted for murder, Shalom, motherfucker. And that piece, as a written piece, just flew. It just went viral. It got like 250,000 shares. That was like a long time ago. And that was my first
Why do you think people got so
many shares?
Because
I said everything that every Jewish person practically wanted to say to people who were hating on Israel. Because Jewish people in the diaspora, and it was mainly the diaspora, did not know, because now we're used to it, all this vitriol on social media. But quite a while ago, people didn't go there. They were afraid. And so I ended up saying what a lot of Jewish people wanted to tell their friends. I was a conduit. And it went viral. That's a lot of shares for an article. So that's when my social media activism started. But I have a small branding agency, which I run with my wife. And I've always kind of like done this on the side because I think it's important to speak up for who we are. Because I want my children to be able to. And we need to lead by example. So that's how it started on social media.
And then... Yes, and you've been doing this, like you said, 15 years, mostly on the side, just so people understand, because, you know, people have a sense of you as this advocate, activist, speaker. You have your own branding agency. Like, what kind of things have you been doing?
Oh, we've worked with a lot of Israeli companies. We're based in Tel Aviv, but we're an international branding agency because I grew up in Hong Kong and London. I've lived in New York and Boston. So it's international branding for... Israeli companies that want to have a world-class brand or global companies. So we've worked directly with Apple in Cupertino, California. We helped launch Gmail in Africa. We did YouTube Space Lab with an agency and Google Creative Labs in the United Kingdom. We've worked with many, many small, medium, and huge corporate companies with their identities, with their story, with their visual identity, and I love it. I love it. I've been in the game for over 25 years.
And this was your focus. That's what you did. Activism was on the side.
It wasn't even activism. I mean, I'm not like you. I mean,
I see it as activism. And, you know, and it's fine. You don't see it as activism. I think going online, writing something, recording something, to give other people the voice they need, that's activism.
Maybe. I mean, I
you
see...
You know, not every activist needs to be shouting outside the gates of the university, you know, let me in.
Who would do that?
It's only crazy motherfuckers, right? But, you know, like, activists, that's activism. So own up to it, okay. Or...
So what's the difference between activism and advocacy? See what I'm doing here?
Yeah.
Welcome to I'm That Jew, the podcast.
Well, we actually had Adela Kochav on season one of this show, and if people haven't seen or listened, I would urge them to go and watch that episode because it was great. And she talked about the difference between activism and advocacy and how she sees it as advocacy is from inside trying to change, having the conversation. Activism is making the noise from the outside, so the advocate gets a seat at the table, and how we need both in our fight, in every fight.
Okay.
Right, so I do say, yeah, you're both, but I see you as like being visibly Jewish, like that's a sort of activism.
Okay.
But everything was on the side, and then what happened October 7th? And you live in Israel, by the way.
Nothing different happened on October 7th. I did what I usually do on, like, when I feel the need to speak up, I spoke up.
But before that, where were you? How, you're Tel Aviv, you have two kids, young kids, incredible boys, I love them.
They don't love you.
It's okay, you know.
Can't
you know
stand what? You.
They'll grow up and they'll see their wrong ways. and I also got one of her Legos, so it's nice.
On October 7th, yeah, I was in Germany. I was not with my family. I went to a friend's wedding 2.5 hours outside of Munich in the countryside on a farm. And I woke up on Saturday morning and everyone was like, yeah, I'm the only Israeli Jewish guy there. Have you seen the news? And I saw the news. It took me 3 days to get back home because it was impossible to get back home. It was very, very difficult. But the bottom line is,
what were those 3 days like?
It was hell. It was trauma. As an Israeli living outside of Israel, or as a Jewish person living outside of Israel with family and really close friends living in Israel, it looked very, very bad. Of course, you could see that the tragedy was bad. We didn't know how bad it was, but it looked it felt existential, and it was.
It was.
It was existential, and I felt that. And not to be close to my wife and my kids was, still I feel the trauma. How do you get back? You're not in control. So I flew to Turkey to try and get a flight. I couldn't, I flew back to Germany, I got back home. But on October 7th, I put out a video, I believe it was October 7th, or maybe October 8th in the morning. And I just said, we need to speak now. Because I saw the wave of anti-Semitism coming to the world. It wasn't a message it was a message to the diaspora, which was, you have to speak now about being Jewish, and you have to speak up now about what's going on here. And the reason is because it's not just targeting Israelis, it's targeting the Jewish people everywhere. And I also asked our allies to speak up, to the people who are friends with Jewish people to speak up. The difference is that I decided to come out of my Facebook hermit hole, which I love Facebook. I love my community of 40,000 people that I really engage with there. And went to Instagram and X and LinkedIn, which I've always done a little bit here and there, but I decided to really put myself out there, and be very, very proactive. Because there was a need for that. And then things started spreading, like in a much, much bigger way. Like I'm That Jew had been seen around 15 million times, but this was, you know, to date, it's like 250 million views of my work. So it kind of started blowing up on different platforms. And I'm still doing it because there's a need. There's a need right now.
What's the need? I think it's clear in your mind what's the need, and we've had so many conversations that I think I know, but put it into words. What is the need?
To say that we're Jewish openly.
Why? I you and I travel around a lot talking with communities. One of the most consistent questions that I get is, if I go to college, do I hide my, you know, my Magen David? Or should I go to a college where I can be openly Jewish? So clearly, not everyone's experiencing that need. Some people are considering hiding. Why is that a need?
First of all, it's a very personal decision. I don't believe in should. You know, I believe that it's important to be who you are. If you have nothing to be ashamed of, if you're not some awful human being that lies and cheats and steals and does terrible things, then just be who you are. Be open about who you are. It's not even about being Jewish. And if being Jewish is something that is important to you, and it is to me, and I'm not religious, and I know you're atheist, I'm a secular Jew, but I celebrate Rosh Hashanah, I fast on Yom Kippur, I love Pesach, I love Chanukah, I love my Shabbat meals with my parents and friends and my kids, I love my heritage, I love my culture, I think that we're a good people, I think that we have great values, I mean, we have our shitheads too, but we have a beautiful story, and we're misunderstood. So there's a need to be understood right now. And there has always been a need to be understood. I mean, you got out of me the reason for Shalom Motherfucker, and 15 years ago people were saying genocide. And I think about it like a company in branding. If you have a story as a company, and it's a good story, you're a good company with good values, with good ideals, and you're in the marketplace, and there are other companies, and you don't proclaim your story, you don't make your story known, then what's going to happen? These other companies are going to create your story for you, and they're going to try and put you out of business. Now, when the companies despise you, then they'll really put you out of business. And we, the Jewish people, have for decades not been armed with our story. So you have your story, you need to speak it. You need to say that you're Jewish because there's no reason to hide your story.
What's our story?
Well, before I get to what's the story, the one, because I get the question asked the same time. It's like, what type of life do you want to live? Do you want to live a life in fear, which is fine, but it's a shitty way to live? Or do you want to be open about who you are? And maybe by being open about who you are, others will be open about who you are. We'll start strengthening each other. We'll start building our voice. We'll start making change with how we educate our children, with bringing allies on board to who we are, with advocacy, with activism, with just being present as opposed to being hidden. October 8th, there's October 7th, which is the tragedy of October 7th and the hostages and the war and the killing and the massacre and the mutilation. October 8th is the silence of the world. And the silence is also on us because we have been silent for too long, and also in the face of our enemies who have been very, very vocal and have stolen our narrative on our watch. This is something that I've been doing for a long time. What I'm saying right now is what I said when I was a kid in JFS in Camden Town in London when I went to Jewish school, when I wrote Shalom Motherfucker because of that guy. And today, we need to say who we are, because if we don't, others will say who we are. And that's what we're living through right now. Why are people saying this about us? Are you fucking kidding me? Because we let them. It's that simple.
Yeah, but okay, let me push on this. Because you know, for people listening and not watching, you're wearing one of your shirts that I also have it, I love wearing, says, "I'm that Jew," with this really strong and very...
bold?
bold Magen David, Star of David. But you live in Tel Aviv. Mm. You can war around and you can wear that shirt. Almost everyone is that Jew.
I don't wear it in Tel Aviv.
But you come around, you were just in Toronto. A couple of months ago, you were in Montreal. You saw Concordia University. You're talking about living in fear or showing I'm that Jew, whatever that is. But I would flip that on its head, and there are people that are afraid to wear that shirt.
Of course, afraid.
Because that's the fear. The fear is not of hiding. The fear is of going out there into the world and saying, I am that Jew.
That's the same thing, Shai. That's the fear of hiding. It's the same thing. And yeah, it's scary.
But you're pushing people to choose to be publicly Jewish and claim their narrative when a lot of people are afraid to do that.
Yeah. What's your question?
So the question is, how do you reconcile the two? Like, the fear is not of hiding. Most people are afraid not of hiding. You're afraid of hiding. You see hiding as the scary thing. Many people see the speaking up, the being visibly Jewish, as the scary thing.
Both. I mean, I think that to simplify what you're saying, fear is natural. It's scary to say that you're Jewish. It is. I get it. I don't push people to say, I don't believe in, you should say, I mean, I believe you should say you're Jewish, but I don't, you know, I'm not going to tell a kid who's 18, you should wear this. It's a personal decision. I just don't want to hide who I am. I'm more scared of hiding who I am and living a life like that than the opposite. Now, that doesn't mean that, I mean, okay, I have done it. I've confronted like hundreds of mobsters and you saw Hamas supporters in Concordia in Montreal. So I'm not advising everyone does that. But it's convenient to hide who you are because you're scared. And I get it. I lived abroad. You know, I've lived in Israel for 15 years now, but I faced anti-Semitism. I went to a Jewish school in London. But I'm okay. You know, it's scary, but it's a decision that you make. It's not even about being Jewish. It's about what kind of life do you want to live? Do you want to live a life where you can be who you are? And I get told, I was told this morning by someone, you know, that they're afraid to, you know, for their children to show that they're Jewish. And I get it. But if we all are afraid and we all decide not to show who we are openly when there is nothing to hide, there shouldn't be anything to hide, then we're in October 8th land, the silence of the Jewish people. And we need to change that. We need to, as a people, own our identities, not privately like we're so good at, openly. Because if we don't, this will continue and continue and continue. So I'm that Jew, you said, you're wearing one of your shirts. And yeah, it's, I guess, one of mine because I created this. But it's not one of my shirts. It's one of your shirts. And it's one of his shirts. And it's one of her shirts. It's the Jewish people's. And it's something to hang your Jewish, it's kind of like a way to express it. And the more people that do, the easier it will be. And I think that Jewish leadership, and I've said this a lot, and it's not to throw Jewish leadership under the bus, because Jewish leadership organizations, Israeli governments from all sorts of, you know, left, right, and center, they do lots of amazing things, all of them, but they suck at narrative. And they haven't invested in narrative. And they haven't armed people with, who are we? How do we explain who we are? And that's the number one thing that people should be investing in right now, in addition to protecting soldiers and communities, of course.
And the hostages.
And not even a question. And we're doing that all the time. But how are we protecting the hostages? Okay? And think about it. If you go deeper, the outside world doesn't care about the hostages, because our enemies have stolen the narrative of the Jewish people and have demonized the Jewish people. And the hostages are nothing to the world because we have not collectively for 20, 30 years humanized ourselves. We've allowed our enemies to dehumanize us. So these hostages, in the eyes of the enemy narrative, as these hostages are colonialists and they love apartheid and they love genocide, are hostages. Because of the narrative of our enemies that our enemies have invested in for decades with money, with vision, and with consistency. So we haven't done that. We need to start doing that today. And by the way, our enemies, like, they were in our position 30 years ago, but they had a vision, they had clarity, they had an audience, they had money, and they were consistent with messaging. We need to do that. Narrative and people owning it on the individual level is critical right now.
So what's our story? Who are we? I will note that the silence is part of the problem.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that there's any problem with fucking silence.
But
no.
Let me ask you this.
I'll explain.
What's the story of the Palestinian people?
I want to go back. I like silence. I like thinking. I don't like this world of where you have to give a soundbite. And I hope that you keep the silence on it because it's a very big question. It's a very big question. And there are many, many different answers.
Well, the reason I note the silence is because you have been dealing with this question for 15 years and you're telling our story of building our quote unquote brand of like putting the Jewish people out there. And yet you don't have like the, here's the story in three bullet points.
Yeah, of course.
Whereas, you and I go and we ask people to go and be openly, proudly, visibly, loudly Jews, they don't know what the story is. And if we don't know, then how can we go and tell people, go tell our story?
It's not that I don't know, it's just I'm thinking.
You should have done your homework and thought before you came to the podcast.
No, I don't like the, by the way, I don't like shows and social media bits where you're required to have bullets. I like to think.
Right.
I like the time.
Yeah.
So fuck you. I like the time
you're welcome.
To think. I like the time to think. And there was a podcast that I was on with a guy called Guy Speer. He's a friend of mine. He's English, Swiss. He's wonderful. And we weren't talking about this type of stuff. But he asked me a question and I thought, and it was like 20 seconds of silence. And he wasn't a dick like you. And he said, I love the silence because it shows that you're thinking. And I think that we should do that more.
Well, because probably he doesn't know you so well. When you're silent.
And there's the banter.
You're either high or trying to change the topic.
I hope that people like realize that we actually are friends and that this is good banter. We do this all the time.
No, but seriously, let's go back. Okay, let me ask you the question differently because it is a loaded question. What's our story, the Jewish people? What would you want the story to be?
Be who you are. And I'm not a rabbi, you know, but if you look at our values and you look at our heritage and our history and our traditions, I think the Jewish people are about that. It transcends religion. It's a culture. It's a way of life. It's family. It's hard work. It's questioning everything. You know, what do kids in yeshiva do all day? They are arguing and wrestling and digging deep and trying to get to a truth. That's the Jewish way. It's like answer a question with a question. You know, go deeper, go deeper, go deeper. It's a lot of things, but it's ours. You asked me another question, which is like, what about our enemies?
I ask you about the Palestinian people because I don't see the Palestinian people as my enemy.
Oh, I totally see the Palestinians as our enemies right now. And I hope that that changes. But they are our enemies right now. And I do see them as enemies. Not like I want to kill them. I want to have peace. I want to make peace with our enemies. But they are, if you look at the statistics, 80 to 85% support Hamas before, during, and after.
So here's where, and again, I'm going to push back because I look at the statistic and say 15 to 20% openly oppose a totalitarian regime and are not afraid to say it in a survey.
I think that's amazing. So we need to build that. Yeah. But until we do, the vast majority want the destruction of Israel or want Israel to be theirs. And that's just like an undeniable fact. But I'm hoping that the Mandela or the Gandhi of the Palestinian rises because the change will come from them. We have to help, but we can't be the ones to do that for them.
But so what is the Palestinian dominating narrative?
Okay. Us.
Me and you?
Yes.
Shai and Eitan, that's a...
Yes, the Jewish people are their narrative. The reason why the Palestinian brand, to me, sucks as a brand is a brand... They talk as a company. Apple talks about Apple. Nike talks about Nike. the Jewish people, I'm that Jew. By the way, it's not my brand. It's not something, it's for the Jewish people. I'm trying to celebrate all the time other Jewish people. Jewish people. Doesn't mean that I don't talk about all sorts of other things, but ultimately, it's about us, and we talk about us. The Palestinian narrative to the world is not about the Palestinians. It's about how bad we are, what we have done, how we have stolen, how we have done this and that and this and that. Their brand is based on us. And that makes it, not that the Palestinians are bad, but their brand, the perception, if you like, what is your story? Exactly, what is your story?
But let me push you on that. Let me push you.
No, because, I want to finish.
Okay.
What is...
You're the only person I'll let finish in this podcast, just so you know.
Fuck you. And to anyone else watching, can you please do this to Shai?
Yes, please do.
Yeah. No, but I... The Palestinian narrative is really about the other. It's not about your own identity. And I wish that that wasn't so, because I'd love to get to know Palestinians outside of their conflict with us. If you talk about the Jewish people, we've got thousands of years of heritage, of stories, of things that we've gone through in the Torah, in the New Testament. You know, it's all there. I don't know what their narrative is, their self-narrative. I haven't seen it. All I see is hate and intolerance.
But so I'll say two things to push back on this. One.
Make it 10.
I'm just going to have two. I'm not that smart. But one, if you think about the Jewish narrative, Hanukkah is about the Greeks coming for us. Passover is about the Egyptians coming for us. Purim is about the Persians coming for us.
Rubbish.
And
that's not the narrative. Hanukkah is about our miracle. Pesach is about our liberation. It's about us. It's not that there's not a them.
So the Palestinians would say that the narrative is their resistance. And by the way, if you just look at statistics, at numbers, their brand is doing pretty well.
Rubbish. Come on.
No, but seriously, like you think about, you're talking about their brand not working. If you go out in the streets in New York City, and I don't know if there's a planned protest today because it's raining and these...
Let's go.
Right?
Let's go.
That you see way more free Palestine than free the hostages. You see way more Palestinian flags than Israeli flags.
But what does it mean? Dig deeper. What does it mean?
Which their brand is working.
No.
Their brand is selling.
They want to
move units.
Wrong.
And they're moving units.
No. Their marketing is working. There's a difference between a brand, which is the base, the foundation for advertising, for public relations, for TV spots, for radio, for marketing. The marketing is working, but what the marketing is based on, which is the brand, is rotten to the core, to their detriment. That's the difference. The brand is the truth. It is the what and the why. The marketing is the how. The how is working. We, on the other hand, our brand, and I'm not talking about I'm that Jew, I'm talking about the Jewish people, our brand is very, very, very powerful. The core of the brand is very, very powerful. What's weak is the marketing. Why? Because Jewish leadership has not invested in narrative. They have not invested in arming the people with words, arming the people with, this is the truth of who we are, this is how we talk. You are, as a professor who has faced so much shit on campuses, see how organized SJP, BDS, how do they do it? They sat down a long time ago, the organizers and the people who are backing the organizers and the people who are backing the backing of the organizers, they sat down and they said, what is our vision? Our vision is the end of the Jewish people, the end of Israel. How do we do that? We're going to demonize Israel. And they believe it. They believe that we are awful. How are we going to do that? Well, we need money. And then we need an audience. And then we have to create materials and build a narrative for this audience. And then we have to do it again and again and again and again and again and decades and decades and decades.
And you would call that marketing?
It starts with the creation of a brand and then you market it. But the creation of their brand is based on a lie. Now imagine if you...
What's the lie?
The lie is that we are inhuman and that we are disgusting and that the Jewish people suck. If you build a brand, though, that is based on a truth, and our brand is based on the truth, and if you don't fucking buy that than buy the Torah, okay, which the whole world has adopted. If you build your brand based on the truth and then you market the truth again and again and again and again with money, with consistency, and with brand ambassadors who are the Jewish people, that's how you win the war. That's how you fight propaganda. You fight propaganda with truth. And Jewish leadership needs to understand that the people want to say that that they're Jewish openly, including the person here that is afraid to let her kid say that they're openly Jewish. She wants to be openly Jewish. She just doesn't know how. The solution is going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight. People need to be patient, and Jewish leadership need to step up and invest money in all the things that they're investing in, which is important for the Jewish people. But that includes enabling us to be who we are openly, because those are the people that need the Jewish people in the suburbs or in the cities that are afraid of being Jewish. They need help. And it's a long game. It's a marathon. That's what our enemies did. They did it well.
Do we
they
have
did
the
it
time?
Based on only. Yeah, of course we have the time. I'm very hopeful.
You're hopeful?
Yeah, because when I walk around with this thing, I get nothing but love. From Jewish people, from non-Jewish people, because I got nothing to hide. You know, if anything, it's an opportunity to have a conversation. It's uncomfortable. But the Jewish people have gotten too comfortable hiding their identities. And yes, hiding. Because if you don't say that you're Jewish and make it a point to proactively say that you're Jewish, in any given situation, I'm not talking about social media, you could be at a dinner with friends who are not Jewish, and you could just throw in there casually, well, it's Hanukkah next week and I'm going to be lighting the candles. That's a little step to being openly Jewish, and a conversation might come. And then what happens when the conversation happens? You get to know me. To know me is to love me if I've got nothing to hide.
Not you specifically, but everyone else, if you get to know
specifically
them, you love
them. Me.
You get to know you is the worst. But yeah. No, but you, by the way, and I've adopted this from you. Every place I go and I speak now, I say two things. I ask people and I don't tell them, like, just think to yourself, you don't have to share. If you step outside now, outside of the synagogue or the JCC or wherever we are, and you just walk in the street, do people know you're Jewish? And most people say no. Like, and I don't even, it's not a yarmulke, tzitzit, or like Magen David, like, do you have a yellow pin? It's something, dog tag, something. Most people say no. And when they come to me later. The other thing I tell them is, on October 8th, they made being openly Jewish a political statement. Mm-hmm. We didn't choose that. But if being openly Jewish is a sign, is a form of protest, then we should be protesting every day. That's the thing that I've been sending them.
Hmm. But I see being openly Jewish as not. I'm not disagreeing with you. Miraculously, I see being openly Jewish as something much more simple. It's just being who you are. I believe in people being who they are, for better for worse. Again. If you're a decent human being, why shouldn't you be who you? I think that's a Jewish value.
But I'm worried that the tendency to hide who the Jewishness is part of who we are.
Yes.
Meaning we have developed that in 2,000 years of exile. And
what do you mean you're worried? That is what is happening.
And if you tell people be who you are, mm-hmm. and who they are is to hide, then you're telling them.
Well, I'm not saying be who you are and hide. I'm saying that I suggest that if being Jewish and your Jewish identity is important to you, whether you're an atheist or whether you're religious, whether you're an Ashkenazi or whether you're Sfaradi or whether you're Black Jewish or whether you're Asian Jewish, then be open about that. Because not being open about that when you want to be and you have no reason to hide it except for the fact that people might hate you because they don't know you, then be openly Jewish, because then they might get to know you and understand that being actually Jewish is a beautiful thing for the most part. So I see it as just like, I'm that Jew. If you think about Black Lives Matter, not the organization, which is corrupt to the core and I can't stand them, but the statement Black Lives Matter, Yeah, Black Lives Matter. Of course. Of course.
Why wouldn't they?
Right. But it's in English, it's like Black Lives Matter. Okay. Me too. Hashtag me too. Okay. If you think about the two words, it's kind of generic. If you think about pride, it's a word. If you think about I'm that Jew in terms of the word structure, it's a statement. It's I'm that Jew. And it begs a question also. What does that mean? What does that mean? I've been asked from people, what does that mean? And then I just kind of like, I just answer whatever I'm feeling in the moment.
Say that again. Say that I'm that Jew again. Like, where do you put the emphasis? You said, I am that Jew.
I'm that Jew. So it could be, I'm that Jew.
Which I see it as I'm that Jew.
It could be, it depends. It could be I'm that Jew, but it also could be I'm that Jew. It could also be I'm that Jew. But the construct of the sentence is, it's mine. It's not Black Lives Matter, which is a very important statement for Black people and an important one. And I support the Black Lives Matter because of course they do. But it's not like kind of like, yeah, something matters.
It's personal.
It's I'm, it's me, it's Anochi, Ani, mine. It was interesting. I was at a talk yesterday and two people, a rabbi and some brilliant scholar, I don't even remember what his name was, they were talking about the Jewish, like what being Jewish is, going back to the question before. And it got into a conversation about history and memory. And the conversation was based on something that Rabbi Sacks said and Douglas Murray, they had a conversation. I can't remember exactly what it was. But history, if you break down the word, is about his story. Memory is your memory. I'm that Jew is, to me, it's about me and my memory and thousands of years of memories that we still celebrate and we still do. Like, you wrote an amazing post, by the way. I don't say this often that he does amazing things, but he did an amazing post about, you did an amazing post about Shabbat. How does an atheist celebrate Shabbat? You can be very, very Jewish and not believe in God.
Yeah.
Because it's what God, whether you believe in God or not, gave us, and the values that, whether you believe in, but it's the values that count. It's the family that counts. It's the celebration that counts. It's the celebration of this, that, and the other that counts. And it's your memories and the memories of the Jewish people and the traditions that keep going and going and going, which I really love. And it's mine. It's yours. It's ours. That's, to me,
so I want to talk, you know, and since I know you think about a lot of things through the lens of branding and the narrative, the story, I want to talk about two things related to that. One, I'll start with the first one, which is the fear that you put a brand out there, but you don't know what will happen to the brand. You don't know who will wear it and wherever it will take it, which is kind of the beauty and the mysticism of it. And I know you're going to want to take some time to think about this question, but I want you to give me your first reaction, and then I want to hear your more
thoughtful. Stop telling
you
what to do.
I'll tell you exactly what to do because I am that Jew.
Okay. Can we do that?
What if you start seeing I'm that Jew shirts all over encampments worn by Jewish Voice for Peace anti-Zionist Jews?
I don't know. Across that bridge. Would it be worse than people calling me a baby killer or calling you the awful things that you've... It's like, I think we've passed... The hatred is so great and out of control that I'm thinking about me and my narrative. You just went through something today.
Yeah.
Where I won't talk about the details.
No, you can talk.
I don't even know all the details. Yeah. But I know that basically someone took something that you said... Okay, the enemy of the Jewish representation, you are literally the representing, I think, the Jewish people right now. You're carrying on your shoulders, And you're in this fight for yourself and for your children, but also because you feel a responsibility to doing what is right, which is being who you are openly. Ultimately, that's what I think that you're doing. And people are taking things that you say, lying about it out of context, and posting it on social media so that within a few hours you have 50 or 100,000 shares or likes or whatever it is that are slandering your name. There's nothing that you can do about it. What you can do, though, is you can keep being who you are and hoping that other people who support you get behind you, see through the lies, and that allies get on board and also see through the lies. So if that happens, then it happens and we'll cross that bridge.
But I'll tell you why I fear is because people can slander my name. I don't care. I don't care because A, I know who I am. And I think that's the message you're starting to send. But the other reason why I don't care is because it's just me. My name lives with me and dies with me. But the reason why people are so emotional and invested in anti-Zionist Jews, which are a tiny minority, is because they are slandering all of our name and might be doing damage to Jews, not just now, but down the road.
But they're doing it anyway. They're slandering Jews anyway, globally, in a very big way. So silence is not going to work. Not owning it is not going to work. Hiding it is not going to work. Kind of hiding it is not going to work. The only thing that's going to work is the person standing up for who they are if they want to. If enemies do that, if bullies come and do that, then we'll have to fight the bullies and we'll just keep going. But I'm not going to not say who I look, and I don't wear this in Tel Aviv. I don't need to, you know, but I wear it when I'm abroad because bottom line is I'm not trying to build the brand of the Jewish people. I mean, technically I am because no one's done it. And I think that's the problem. You have this advocate and that advocate and this activist and that activist and this all sorts of narratives. And it's beautiful. I think that's really important, but it's not held together by anything. And I think that this makes it easier for people to express who they are. I'm That Jew is not about me. You know, there have been a couple of advocates who have said, look, I'm not doing that. I don't want to wear it because, and it's like, it's not about you. It's about all of us. And so I respectfully disagree with them because they don't understand what I'm trying to do. You need to own your identity, and that starts with owning it. And then you'll face the challenges as they come. But I think we've already faced them. If someone's going to change this into that, I'm that genocidal Jew, they're fucking doing it anyway. And they've done it by the billions. So yeah. I want us to own who we are.
And I want to talk about the other concern about branding. And you kind of brought it up already, which is, how do you sell a brand to someone who doesn't yet identify with the brand? And specifically, like you said, it's in English, you mostly go around the diaspora. What about Israeli Jews?
Well, you asked me those two things that you just asked. So I'll try and answer the first thing and then I'll get to the Israel thing. We're being dehumanized. Okay? To dehumanize and to deliver a narrative which is where you're kind of like not a human being, you're just a thing. There's no empathy there. There's just hatred there. But if I say I'm that father of two Jew, if I say I'm that love NBA basketball Jew, if I say I'm that mother who loves entrepreneurship Jew, then there's something human in there. And that humanity, and I've seen it happen, connects with non-Jews. Because they're also a father of two. They also love entrepreneurship. They also love basketball. It's an opportunity to see people as, we're just like you. I'm that Jew, I'm that you. I'm just like you. I'm Jewish, but I'm just like you. So it humanizes. And I think that that's very important, especially now, but it's a forever game. We can't stop doing it. And that's the thing that terrifies me the most, which we can talk about, is the apathy of the Jewish people when things eventually get a little bit better. The other thing that you asked is about Israel. I think that the Jewish people have shown up for Israel, especially this year. And I don't think that, and I don't say this to criticize Israelis, I don't think we've shown up for the Jewish people abroad. And I think that the powers that be need to really think about how to bring the diaspora and Israel together again, because for many, many years we've been kind of like drifting apart. And that means that Israelis need to understand that no Jewish, you know, you can't say an Israeli, kilo, I'm Israeli, I don't identify as Jewish. No Jewish, no Israel. I mean, that's the bottom line. Israelis need to understand that, and the people abroad are suffering, and we need to be there for them, and not just the government. We, as individuals, need to understand that people are facing hatred and intolerance, and our brothers and sisters are scared, and that we are with them, and then we need to show up for them. Long game, marathon, all the time, forever. No more splintering. We need to come together again. And it's not Israelis in Israel and diaspora in diaspora. It's Star of One, baby. We need to do that. It's
so critical. What would you say for, you know, we've been talking a lot about the diaspora, and I don't really care about the leaders. I care about the people. Mm-hmm. What can an Israeli Jew do to create that connection, to work harder to create a connection with the diaspora?
I don't think that we can. I mean, I'm with you when you say, kind of like, I think I know what you mean when you say, I don't care about the leaders, because I think, but we need leadership. We need new Jewish leadership, people who understand that, and I'm going to go back to narrative, that narrative is important. Why? Because if you can explain to people why the silence of October 8th happened because no one gave a shit about the Jewish story and they didn't make it a priority, and it affects Israel. How many soldiers have died because of, I'm talking about after October 7th. Needless soldiers have died because of public pressure from abroad to not do things, that Israel shouldn't do things because the Jewish voice wasn't strong enough to put the pressure on them. You need leadership. You need money to kind of get to the masses to make them understand.
No, I completely agree. But some people will be listening, not because it's in English. Of course, this is an international, mostly English-speaking and Latin America podcast. But there are people listening in Israel. Mm-hmm. And they probably, if they're listening, they want to help create that connection. What can they do?
Right now, not much. That's the truth. Look, it's been over a year, to build a voice, to build a movement, to start something new. Look, there's no other way of saying it. It takes time. It takes vision. We need to get there. So right now it's hard, but that's why leadership, private investors to get behind narratives and to get behind something bigger is really, really important. And then you will start. It's like a startup. You know, this is kind of, I see it as a startup. Startups are hard to get off the ground, but you need the vision, you need to raise money, you need to get the right team on board, you need to get people who care, and you need to start small and then you start building, and it takes time. So that's what we need. We need money, we need real leaders, new leaders who get it.
Israel and in the diaspora.
Yeah, we're Jewish. I mean, the same shit that happens to us in Israel when Hamas is lobbing rockets at my head is the same type of thing that is happening on Columbia campus or in Amsterdam. That hatred, it's the same thing. It might be more verbal, it might be a little pushing and shoving, but ultimately it leads to the same thing. So we're all facing the same thing, and we need leadership that understands how important it is to have a voice, because a voice is, it's like when I write something and it stays in my head, like as someone who's creative, and it stays in my head, it's just in my head. But as soon as I say it, it's out there in the world, and I can kind of like, I can commit to it now. I can get someone else to commit to it. If I put it down on paper, it's a commitment. I've made a commitment, and it's out there right now. We need to commit to that and not commit to fear, because fear is very inside. But when we wear our Jewish identity and we say it, we feel strength. The empowerment is of wearing this is a very, I feel strengthened. It's not like the Jewish people. It's like, I feel strengthened. But then the interesting thing is someone else will come to me even when they're not Jewish and like, I'm with you. There's strength in that. So to get back to your question, building that will take time, but we need to build it. It's been a year and it needs to continue. And I hate saying that it's going to take time because people are like now. But you know what? In the Second World War, people were miserable and suffering for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. We've got a long road ahead and it's going to affect all of our children. So we need to do this.
Are we going to see I'm That Jew shirts in Hebrew and in Spanish, in Portuguese, French, Je suis cet juif?
I think that what I really love about what's happening with I'm That Jew is it's not mine. And I told you the story before of how it came to be. The inception of I'm That Jew was never about me.
Yeah, but you still sell the shirts. You still create the banners.
Shut up, let me talk.
This is my podcast.
Yeah, it's your podcast and I'm the guest, so shut up.
You didn't let me talk on your podcast.
Was it true?
No, I don't remember.
You know, I have to listen to it again. That was like, what's that, like over a year ago?
Yeah.
The inception was about the other. It was about her. What I love about I'm That Jew is that now people are starting to own it in their own way. People are making art pieces. People are putting clips about I'm this Jew, I'm that Jew. When I make the banners that I've made or the animated posters, it's about other people. It's about celebrating the other, but it's also providing people with a tool to jumpstart how they would talk about their own Jewish identity. So I hope that people continue to do that. In terms of the actual merchandise, which, you know, a portion goes to Tengav, a charity which I really love, and I want to talk about it as well. I think it needs to always come from a place of integrity and a place of decent values and a place of quality. Like, you know, the stuff is, and I've had arguments with people that like, you got to bring the price down. I'm like, but then if you bring the price down, then the sweatshirt will be kind of like cheap and fall apart. And the Jewish people are a quality brand. We're a quality people. I think about those things and I think about like the design and I think about the font and I think about the sentences need to be good.
You do, yeah. Just for people who've hung out with you and you want to create some content, typically like phones are off, we're just talking, but every once in a while, okay, let's do some video. And I'm like, okay, let's just start talking. I was like, no, we got a plan. Let's look at the lighting. Let's walk two blocks away. Let's set it like you really think about how everything comes together.
I'll tell you something about branding. I love branding. People misunderstand branding because there's a lot of bad branding out there. To me, branding, there's truth in branding. If you can answer the truth of a company and not what their product does, but how do they get it to be so perfect? How do they, how many hours do they spend over and over again? It's when you get to the truth of a company like that, then you start to see quality, you know, that they care. This is why they get up in the morning, because this is what, if they're building an antique dresser, the craftsmanship is super important to them. And truth in branding to me is answering the truth of the company. I say no to companies, like I haven't worked with a lot of companies this past year because, you know, I dropped everything to do this. But I say no to companies when I see from the leadership that they just want to make something up and then it's not coming from a pure place. And I'm a purist and I have a small agency, so I say no to clients because I want to work with people who believe in the craftsmanship of what they do and building the brand around that. So going back to the Jewish people, I know this is a long answer, but I believe that the Jewish people are rich. I believe that the Jewish people are rich in heritage and a beautiful culture and family values and working hard and, you know, thriving and achieving and arguing to get to truth. And that's a quality brand for me. It's not about things that suck. It's about life. You know, I have a sweatshirt that says to life, which I love, which I almost wore. And I want the brand to reflect that now and forever, because the client are the Jewish people. You know, the people who need to be proud of the brand are the Jewish people. It's not about an organization or organizations. It's not about governments of Israel. It's about a people. And the merchandise, as you asked, it needs to reflect quality and creativity and diversity and tolerance and the values of the Jewish people. And celebrating the individual and the collective at the same time. It's the most important client, again, air quotes, that I've ever had the privilege and the honor to work on. And it's deeply, deeply, deeply personal.
Let's get to the personal for a second before we finish.
This hasn't been personal?
No, this has been beautiful, but I want people to get to know Eitan.
Oh, good luck.
Yeah. You actually reached out to me very early on to help. As a we didn't know each other. As a person to person, not to help with money or with platforming, just to help the individual. We get actually mistaken on the street for each other many times, you know. I take it as an offense when people
so
think
I.
that I
we have something in common.
We both have two incredible kids. We both
have incredible wives.
Incredible wives. I was going to say, but
no, you weren't. I saved
50%,
your ass.
50% of what we do is our wives. You actually, like, your wife is also your business partner, or she works with you.
She's not my business partner, but she works with me on the branding and all the stuff.
So I told my wife is a partner, and you get to deal with that problem, but you don't call your wife a partner, but that's your issue. For all seriousness, like, we've also both broken down quite a bit. People look at you and look at me and say, wow, you guys are strong and you're consistently speaking and you're doing all these things. But there's a dark side to all of this. How's that been like for you? What would you like to share, if at all?
No, I don't mind sharing. It's like, it's hard. It's hard to, it's depressing content. You know, if you think about what we create and what we do physically, and especially you on campus grounds being faced with, it takes a toll. And people are looking at us and other advocates like us to help them get through this very dark time. So there's a weight.
And we're expected to be strong.
But we are strong. I think I'm strong.
I don't feel strong.
Oh, yeah. I think we're strong. I think that being weak in a moment or struggling, or having anxiety, or crying, or being vulnerable, I think that if we are open to that, us within ourselves, and there's nothing to be with being Jewish, just like, you know, man to man, human to human, I think vulnerability is strength, because it's honest. I think when you're honest with yourself, that's strength. So I look in the mirror and I'm like, I'm having a bad day. And I do, I have bad days. I have days when, usually with me, it's like I crash after a couple of months. Like on this particular, I don't like calling it a tour or speaking.
It is a tour. It's a speaking tour.
I don't know what it is. It's me.
It's an organizing tour.
To me, it's just like I'm going around trying to strengthen communities. That's what I'm trying to do. It with the travel and with the amount of people that reach out and all the schools that I've talked at, or the universities, or the talks in salons or big events. It takes its toll, because you know women and men weep when we hug. Sometimes they cry, and it's like, and then when I go home, I have that. At the same time, it's a beautiful thing. He sits down with my kids, and sometimes when they're complaining, he says, "What are you complaining about?" And then they tell him, and he kind of like says, "That's hard, right?" And they're like, yeah. And he goes, well, life is hard. Life is hard. But what you do with that, you know, you get up and that's strength. So it's okay for us to hit art. That's when we lean on our friends. That's when you were hurting and I didn't know you, I reached out because I saw that you were hurting and I think that you're doing very, very important work and I'm there for you. That's what also gets me through things, like my wife, my kids, but also people who, you know, I get those hugs and it strengthens me. So I try and focus on the light, but yeah, it's hard. And that's also, I see, and I'm not caveating this to be politically correct, but this really does help me. We see what hostage families are going through. We see what people whose kids were killed in Nova are going through. We see what IDF soldiers who have no legs and their families are going through. We see what families whose husbands and brothers and sisters and wives are on the front lines and sometimes beyond the front lines are going through. And we see what Jewish people are going through. All around the world. And this is strength. This is not weakness, me being emotional. That's strength. That's life. Good that I care about it. Good that I feel it. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's dark, but you get through it and you get up and you fight and you bring the other person up and I'll call you if you ever need me. And you got a whole army of people supporting you. You've got the Jewish people supporting you. You've got allies supporting you. That's what gets me through the dark. It's not always easy, but I think about other people. And it helps, you know, it helps. And then it makes me good. Like, I'm good again, you know. I'm good again.
No, yeah. I mean, I'm with you 99% of the path. But for me, it's a lot of days. It's just coming home. You're then... We have that eyes locking. She knows something's wrong, but it's becoming too much. And I go straight to the bedroom, beeline to the bedroom, literally get underneath the blanket, 2-3 hours. And then when I come out, it's like, okay, I can deal with this again. And I think people don't realize this. People see you. People see me. People see our friend Abi Hamra. They see all of us fighting and speaking and confronting the hate online and offline. And they say, I could never do that because they are strong and I am just a human being. And the whole point is telling them, no, no, no. We are nobodies just like you.
I'm so glad that you said that because I was afraid that it was going to become about the advocates. And then you said what you said. And again, and you can cut this out if you want.
We're going to cut all of what you said out. Yeah.
Good.
It's just me speaking.
Excellent. I'm just speaking. That actually would be a great podcast because then that really would be Here I Am.
Here I Am, Shai Davidai, not with.
Yeah, Here I Am. Cut this out because I don't know if she'll agree, but there was a woman here in the studio that was afraid for her son. And she was emotional and crying just by talking. We're sitting down talking that it's about all of us. All of us have that fear. All of us have that darkness right now. And it's going to be around for a while. And we have to get comfortable with it and keep doing the work because it's existential. And yeah, there are going to be dark days for you and for many of the people that we know who are in the public eye fighting. But we didn't, you know, we're doing this because we feel that we need to. I know that you've said it before, you're doing it for your children. And to me, that's why I keep going. Like, I'm doing this for my kids. But that woman, she's crying because of her kids. And so she has those dark days. We all have those dark days. We're all the same. And we're not superstars. We're not public. You know, maybe we're public figures, but I actually really don't care about that stuff. It looks like I do. But
no, I agree.
I'm trying to send the message to my people. Because I'm part of that collective. So but it's about them. It's about all of us. That's it? That's the one personal question? Got any others?
We're honestly I the thing is that I can ask you so many more questions and I will, because that's the nice thing about being your friend, is that we don't need a podcast to meet and speak. We have to wrap this up, and I finish every episode with what I call the Jewish lightning round, a series of rapid fire questions. You know, the first thing that comes to mind, just throw it out there.
Am I allowed to take my time? You're going to like give me a hard
it's
time.
Rapid fire. There's no right or wrong answers. You get one pass and I get to tell you if you get that pass and you get to give me grief for doing that. All right. Eitan Chitayat, what is one thing people don't know about you?
I love Lego. No, everyone knows that about me. I'm a deeply, deeply, deeply personal. I'm an introvert.
What is one thing people don't know about the Jews?
You were amazing.
What is your favorite curse?
Motherfucker.
Can you say it like you mean it?
I meant it when I said it to you right now. Is that a mic? Is that a drop the mic moment? I think that's a drop the mic
moment. We don't drop mics in this podcast. We don't.
How do I drop this?
We don't have enough money. but if you're listening and you send us money, then we can start dropping mics. When was the last time you cried?
Around 6 minutes ago, I was trembling.
Yeah. If you could have any person over for Shabbat dinner from any moment in history, who would that be?
Say it again?
If you could have any person over for Shabbat dinner from any moment in history, who would that be?
My grandfather, Papa.
Tell me about him.
I'm half Iraqi, half Bulgarian. On my mother's side, I'm Bulgarian. My grandfather in Bulgaria was just a very simple, well, like, as I got to know him as my granddad, very simple man, a very warm man, a good man. And whenever I'd come over to his house, to my grandparents' house, you know, we would stay there in the summers. And, you know, we played Sheshbesh, we would hang out, and he had books about the Second World War, and I read all of them. And he was in the resistance against the Nazis, and he was in prison for quite a few years. And I just miss him, and I wish that he were here, and I'd love to have him, and my grandmother, of course, but you said one person. So right now, when you asked me, I was thinking about my granddad, about Papa. I would love him to be over. He's a good man.
What's your favorite Jewish holiday?
Hanukkah.
What's your least favorite Jewish holiday?
Is Yom Kippur a holiday?
Yeah.
Sucks.
When do you feel safest?
Always. Well, no, that's a bit extreme. I feel safe around people who really know who I am. I feel safe/comfortable around people who really know me.
When do you feel least safe?
You know, I was in Concordia in Montreal. And I was with one or two other people. And they were supporting Hamas, and there were hundreds of them. And I was really in the mob. I don't know why I'm bringing this up, because a lot of people asked me. I didn't feel unsafe. I felt so empowered because I felt like I was representing something good. Yeah. So when do I... sorry about the segue. Unsafe? On Israeli streets with Israeli drivers. It's terrifying. Really, it's terrifying sometimes.
What gives you hope?
You.
Sorry, you caught me off guard. What's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of the words Jewish civil rights?
I hate the phrase.
Why?
Because I don't understand it.
Okay.
Well, what does it mean?
Honestly, it means so many things to so many people. I believe that it's just asking, demanding to be accepted for who we are at every aspect of our lives.
As Jews?
As Jews, as anything. But specifically now, the focus is on Jewish civil rights. But we need to also be fighting for LGBTQ civil rights and African American and Asian American and Hispanic civil rights and immigrant civil rights. Like, but we haven't been focusing on Jewish civil rights. Finally, every episode I urge the listeners to donate to one charity that does good in Israel or across the Jewish diaspora. Where would you want listeners to donate to this week?
So, I support an organization called Ten Gav, T-E-N-G-A-V. And what they do is they support Israelis in need. And this has nothing to do with October 7th. They've been around for a long time. They're incredible. Let's say you're a seamstress in Israel and your machine breaks and that's your livelihood. And you don't know what to do. You need a sewing machine, right? But so they'll bring a social worker. She'll vet your case, make sure that it's legit. And then they'll crowdsource a sewing machine so that she can go back to work. And it could be a bed. It's for Israelis who need help because of a jam that they're in, and it's vetted by social workers, and a portion of everything that I sell goes to them. They're wonderful, and they're run by women, by two women who really, really, really care, and I've been supporting them for years. With anything that I can. Tengav.
Tengav, T-E-N-G-A-V. Eitan, where can people find you?
The usual, Instagram, X.
What's your handle?
I think if you look for Eitan Chitayat, which is a bit of a mouthful, but Eitan, E-I-T-A-N, and C-H-I-T-A-Y-A-T, words. That's where they can find me. And LinkedIn as well, which I think is a super important platform to be on and to be advocating in the professional world, also there, the Jewish cause. So LinkedIn as well.
Thank you for coming. You know, for so many people, Jewish people, you've made banners for, feeling like, I'm that Israeli professor Jew, I'm that this Jew, I'm that Jew. For you, you're the OG. It should be, I'm that Jew.
You say we know each other so well and so deeply, but we don't yet. It's just starting.
Of course.
Right, but I think that's my message also to the Jewish community, is I want us all to get to know each other better, because I think that we don't. The work is on the inside, I'm that Jew, for us to also get to know each other a little bit better in the long run, and to continue getting to know each other and strengthening our relationships. So I agree that we know each other deeply, but like, I want us all to come together a little bit more. And
so this is an open invitation from Eitan. I'm not going to put his address now, but it'll be in the show notes for Shabbat dinner, so he can get to know every Jew in the world. So here I am with Eitan Chitayat. Toda raba, achi.
Hi, I'm Michael Greenspan, Shai's father-in-law. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Here I Am podcast with Shai Davidai. Here I Am is recorded at the Cave Production House in Hackensack, New Jersey, and is brought to you in partnership with Abby Sophia and Adamit Productions. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to everyone at Adamit Productions for turning Shai's dream into a reality, and to all our donors and partners for their unwavering commitment to fighting for Jewish civil rights. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, our listeners. Let's be honest, none of this would have been possible without your support and dedication. Showing up is half the battle. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for being there. Thank you for saying, "Here I am."